Hello to all our listeners of the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I wanted to share with you a very interesting and different format this time around of a recording of a webinar that we did a couple of days ago, where we had three of the most prominent voices in the industry share about how the supply chains will look after the COVID-19. We had Dr. John Gattorno, who is one of the most prominent voices worldwide and author of the book Dynamic Supply Chains, which is a bestseller in the world of supply chain. We had Roxanne Desmish, who is the global head of supply chain for AMS AG, which is one of the largest semicon companies in the world and obviously one of the most complex supply chains to look after. And Fred Laluyo, who is the CEO and co-founder of Era Technologies, one of the leading software as a service providers in the area of supply chain automation and cognitive software. So do hope you will find this insightful, and what follows is the exact recording of the webinar with live questions and answers from an audience that spanned the globe. So without further ado, let's start the discussion. Let me start by introducing first the panel, and I'll start with John. John is the executive chairman of Sydney-based specialist advisory business Gattorno Alignment, and he's one of the most respected supply chain thought leaders globally. He has written many books, many iconic books for the industry. A few of them I have read myself. And he has also been included in the Hall of Fame of the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals, CSCMP, which some of you may know is one of the most prestigious organizations in the world. Well, John, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Radu.
And then Roxanne is a senior executive and global leader with 20 years plus in high-tech industries. She's now running the global supply chain for AMS, which is one of the top global semiconductor companies. And she's an active promoter and driver of Industry 4.0 initiatives, as well as gender diversity and leadership projects. Roxanne, thanks for making the time as well.
Good morning, everybody, and looking forward to an active interaction.
And Fred is the CEO and co-founder of Era Technology. Era is a cloud-based supply chain intelligence software solution. Very simply put, Era understands how your business works and makes real-time recommendations to enable a self-driving enterprise. Prior to Era, Fred has been an entrepreneur even before. So he was the one that set up and led to IPO Anaplan, as many of you know, which is one of the best supply chain software companies in the world, and basically was valued at more than $1 billion. Fred, and he's joining us from California, so quite a bit of a different time zone. Fred, thank you for making the time.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Super. So let's start with the first question that we have prepared and the current reality that we are in. So the topic today is supply chains after COVID, but COVID-19. Let's start with where we are today. And I'll start with you, John. How do you see the situation? How do you see your clients coping with COVID-19? And what are some of the main challenges that they have been faced with?
Thanks, Radu. Well, before I just answer that specific question, I'd say one of the good things coming out of this crisis is that I think there's a rapid increasing recognition that supply chains are pervasive in our lives. A lot of the previous work that's been done in supply chains has been focused on infrastructure or focused on technology, and has been missing the people stuff. And now I think we have a recognition right down to the consumer level that supply chains are important. You know, if factories stop and transport stops and retailers close, things don't move, and we, you know, as consumers go back to living locally and doing the best we can. But look, this current crisis started on the supply side. Really, a lot of companies, their initial attention was looking to understand how they could get the supplies they'd ordered, and particularly critical items. And not only companies, but governments have been really shown to be somewhat caught out by this now because of one major thing, and that is that we've had an overdependence on China for a lot of our components and equipment. And this has grown up due to, I think, over a long period, due to the globalization movement, which we'll talk more about later on how that might change. So I think That's been the initial phase, which happened in the first 3 or 4 weeks from probably early March through till around about mid-April or late April. And now, of course, with China getting back into the factories and starting things up, the whole thing has changed again to being a bit of a demand problem, because the demand out there has, of course, reduced incredibly because of retailers shutting down and everything else. So it's been quite an amazing situation where we started off with a supply issue, and of course now it's gone to a demand issue. And our the people that we know are trying to manage both. One of the good things for people who own facilities around the world, 3PLs and others, is that distribution centers are being much sought after, and stock, which is was on the water, as it were, to its destination, is now sitting in destination warehouses. And that didn't get on the water initially, but it's outside of factories, is sitting in origin DC. So those people who are property developers and own distribution centers and so on are doing quite nicely at the moment. We'll have to see what happens in a little while.
Thank you, John. And from a manufacturer perspective, Roxanne, what were, I wanted to ask you, and at AMS, what were some of the biggest issues that you experienced? And it was a shock to the system, right? I mean, on top of the supply and demand shocks. Maybe just to share a little bit from your perspective and where you are now.
So I think it came in a different waves. So for us, with it of course started with the threats on supply, and we indeed have a lot of supplier in China. So the challenge started already beginning of February, so just after Chinese New Year. And it turned out to transform through times from a pure supply issue to supply plus logistic, because when companies started to go in lockdown, then the lanes which you would use to transport your cargo would simply disappear, particularly when you are relying on a commercial belly of the airplane. And then it started to become a challenge on a global way, because we don't only have, of course, we have a lot of supplier base in China, but we have supplier all across the globe. And then when policies started to come in with work from home, confinement in Germany, in Austria, in Italy, then the problematic became much more challenging than what we thought was already challenging just after Chinese New Year. So the bar was raised in the level of complexity we had to manage, to look at how our overall flow of supply and manufacturing connects, not only because some of our partners would not operate, but also some of our logistic partners would also not work in the proper time. Mm. And then it turns out to become also a manufacturing problem, because we also had to see how we keep a factory running. Are we classified as a mission critical industry and thus should be able to continue to operate? And if we continue to operate, how we make sure we follow regulation and rules so that we can continue to operate? So it became, from an external view, internal challenge. And that's also why we decided from an AMS perspective that all function who can work from home will work from home, and we dedicate to working in office those which are really working in the line. We pay a lot of attention on making sure safe distancing is guaranteed, and all those kind of things. And then what we will see now coming up in the late of Q2 and Q3 is, how is the demand? Because I think in Q1, when the premises of the crisis started, most of our customers decided to keep the demand they had because they wanted to make sure if the turnaround would be fast, they could still be able to operate and receive goods from our side. And in Q2, most of them have continued with the same perspective. But we all know likely the overall global demand has slowed down and has changed. And thus, I expect in Q3, Q4 to start to facing more demand challenges while the supply gets back on track. With, of course, China having almost fully recovered and the other countries having found their way around in making sure that supply can continue and manufacturing can continue.
Mm.
So a multi-phase and a multi-dimensional challenge for a manufacturer.
Right. And Fred, from your perspective, from a software technology perspective, now digital solutions having visibility, knowing where your cargo is, knowing where your product is has never been more important than being able to make those decisions in real time and well. Tell us a little bit from ERA perspective how you helped and how it worked for your clients around these times.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. I would echo John in the initial supply crisis, but it became very quickly, that was what Roxanne was saying, the perfect storm, right? A lot of our clients are CPG companies, life sciences, oil and gas, manufacturing, that's the majority of them. And after the initial question on supply came basic dramatic behavior changes in demand with consumer and enterprise hoarding. So we had to help them understand those patterns and how to redirect their inventory because they saw hoarding behaviors, and it was hard to identify given the complexity and the size of these companies. You touched on the manufacturing capabilities, right? I mean, driving PPE equipments to the factories, dealing with the employees not showing up or not being able to show up. It went up to 30% of the workforce was not able to be there. Their factories for one of our customers having to reassign people. So again, people at the center of the equation, but from demand signals being completely, hard to understand to manufacturing, logistics, transportation, very, very hard to manage. And as I think Roxanne touched on, coming out of this crisis, the new normal, where market shifts are going to be happening in very complex situations to anticipate. One of our clients, for example, manufactures a lot of the products that you use to sanitize your hands, sanitizing gels and all this kind of good stuff. But the market post-COVID will be completely different. It will be a much broader market, but this crisis has generated a massive amount of new entries in the market. So new categories are being created. So the perfect sum, supply, demand, manufacturing, logistics, transportation, all of this hitting at the same time, combined with the core issues around people, either working in confinement, not being able to go to the manufacturing sites. So that really created a perfect storm for our clients for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I'll stay with you, Fred, for the next question and kind of look to the future, right? And what we will see coming out of these lockdowns, right? Because now, more or less, US has been easing lockdowns. I think about half of the states are back to some level of activity. China is pretty, has done a fantastic job. South Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, there's more and more, and Australia, obviously, as well. So the world is slowly coming out, right? So how do you see things in the next couple of months? What will be the impact and some of the things that will happen around supply chains?
Look, I think a couple of months is going to be too early to tell. When we talk to our customers, we spend a lot of time discussing with them. They see a long recovery, and they see a recovery that will be differentiated by geographic areas. It's not going to be like everybody's back to normal. And the trigger of stay-at-home policies is only a small one. Yes, it will enable people to go back to work, but the work didn't stop. The profound impact on supply and demand is not directly related to people being able to go to work. I think in a digital world, a lot of people were able to go to work. So yes, factories will be able to work and truck drivers will be able to be back on the roads. But I think short term, it's very hard to predict what's going to happen. We know what trends this current situation is creating, but we're seeing a recovery that's going to be very differentiated by region and by industry. As I said, there'll be new market will expand. Some others will dramatically contract. Consumer behaviors will change. Supply will change. We're seeing a lot of our customers right now talking about SKU rationalization. Some of them talking about taking down 30% of their SKUs. So basically, you need the hand sanitizer on the shelves. You don't really care if it's coming in 3 or 5 different bottles and 4 or 5 different flavors. You just need to provide it. So I think that rationalization of supply chain, that rationalization of SKUs is happening. And then, of course, we'll see a complete rethinking of supply networks, right? I want to make sure that I have less dependency on a small number of suppliers, more opportunity to actually supply locally. So I think all of that are big conversations. And a lot of our customers are currently looking really hard into their suppliers network to see how they can avoid a crisis like this from recurring, which is really the what people are worried about is that we're experiencing like the first wave, but there could be aftershocks and we have to be ready for these aftershocks. And I think so again, back to my point of perfect storm, I think everything is in the air, supply, demand, the volatility is there, and then fundamentally trying to secure the ability to make less products and deliver them to the consumers in a COVID-proof fashion, I think is what's keeping all our customers active right now.
Makes sense. And Roxanne, I'll shift to you, and I want to, and we received this good question, and I'll go a little bit further with the question to Fred. One of the listeners was saying, do you see some reshape coming up in terms of the supply chains? Like we had just in time now, obviously that doesn't work in a COVID situation. You know, more people want more diversification because you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, i.e. China, and all of a sudden be stuck. Or, you know, reshoring your production units nearer to your consumer demands and your markets. Do you see any of these trends coming? I mean, from your perspective on the manufacturing side?
So from my perspective, yes, there will be renewed and strengthened attention to what I would call business continuity plan, which in general are supported with flexibility. So flexibility either in your supplier base with dual source or multi-sourcing, flexibility in your manufacturing location, so that one product could be qualified in two different places, so that if one place is down, you can switch over. So there will be more conversation and maybe a higher level of attention and desire from the C-suite to invest in those topics than per normal. Because we all know, I mean, we have also to talk about the reality is we cannot do dual source everything. Particularly in technology companies, sometimes the material you source has a very unique quality where you don't find a second source so easily. So you will never be able to have a full-fledged, full flexible supply chain. And even if you would, this comes with a cost. So traditionally, companies are usually reluctant to invest. I think this pandemic has pushed more attention and more desire to at least look at some items where you can really, because they are high volume, you can really make the effort to build in this flexibility. So this is one aspect. The second aspect, maybe going to the question on the just in time. Indeed, we are currently, we started an internal discussion on how do we prepare for rebounds. Because if you would look at the situation today, you tend to be more conservative, you tend to reduce your factory loading so that you don't overbuild. But if the rebound is very steep, then you might immediately end up in allocation mode. So from oversupply to undersupply. And thus, it's extremely important to be very alert and to establish the right demand sensing methodology, depending, of course, on segment, because not all segments will rebound in the same way. depending on your customer portfolio, because not all customer will react in the same way. But so that we also take this opportunity to build selective buffer for the right products, so that we are ready to support the rebounds, which is likely to come. So I was listening to a podcast this morning from an economist. They're likely to come in the second half of the year and definitely very strong in 2021. And that's, I think that's where supply chain has to play a major role on selecting the right horse to bet on, so that you don't end up with obsolescence, of being creative in finding ways to do semi-finished goods stocking, which in our industry is obviously possible, maybe not in all industry, so that we are prepared. And we are also discussing to be prepared for allocation, means the type of report we need, the type of process we would like to have strengthened out and robustly designed, so that we can handle an allocation situation should it happen immediately after the crisis. So those are the current conversation we are pursuing.
And to the point, and we actually got also a question to your point, Roxanne, recovery won't be consistent across customers and regions. And I want to ask you, John, because obviously I think you pretty much coined the terms of, you know, segmented supply chains, and not all clients are equal, and you should, you know, you should focus on your partners and make sure that you create those buckets, right, in terms of what makes most sense to your business. Tell us a little bit about how companies can think from that perspective, from segmenting their supply chain operating models depending on the, you know, on the clients and their behaviors, and what would work best.
Look, a lot of the solution going forward is going to be companies just having a good hard look at their organization design. I've been saying for a long time that the current designs that most organizations I see around the world have at the moment are about 200 years old, and they're at the end of their life cycle. It's the high tech companies, it's the fast fashion companies, it's companies, tech companies that are really breaking that mold and doing something different. What we have to do is get away from this sort of one-size-fits-all approach. And quite frankly, we've been pursuing the wrong sort of customer segmentation methods up to now. Because if you segment your customers based on sort of institutions, you know, wholesaler versus retailer versus contractor versus electrician versus something else, all those institutions add up to, you know, very often many companies having 12 to 15 segments. It's too many. We've got to start reducing complexity. And the way to do that is to go for what I call behavioral segmentation, and where you can get down, to cut across all those different institutional segments to maybe four. And what I'm going to be suggesting going forward is that we reorganize our organizations into what I call business as usual teams. And business as usual will take care of the business that goes from base load, very reliable, standard, you know, as Roxanne was talking about, perhaps up to a certain amount of volatility, maybe, 20 or 30% plus or minus what our forecasts were. That's what I would call business as usual. And we have to develop teams that can cope with using different combinations of processes and technologies and different types of teams to handle that. Beyond that, I think now that we've seen what a really major interruption can do to the world, we had GFC, we've had, the dot-com revolution, we've had things like that in the past, but nothing like this. I think going forward, we can expect more. And so I think we're going to have to, organizations are going to have to develop, I'll call it a smart team, sitting to one side, a small team working on purely on contingency plans and thinking about and drawing on all the functions, but putting a small team together, drawing on whatever technology they can to be at least semi-prepared for whatever it is that we're going to be facing next time around. The fascinating thing I've found, and I've been talking to some of the best companies in the world over the last 4 weeks in the industrial sphere, they said what they're seeing right now is that increased cooperation between their functions. and getting things done and improving, you know, the responsiveness in the light of this sort of adversity we've been having. And the thought is, if we can continue that in a more formal way rather than just doing it when we've got an emergency. I've been talking to companies in South Africa running transportation and ports and trains and things, and they're telling me they're running at 60% capacity with 40% of the headcount. So what does that tell you? It tells you, you know, it tells you about productivity. It tells you about people's willingness to change under pressure. Somehow we've got to get that same mental attitude, and it's going to mean structural unemployment, which is another question we've got to address in terms of training and vocational training and so on. But this is good news if we can carry that sort of goodwill through to the future and start, you know, fundamentally. I think it's a generational opportunity we've got in front of us, and those companies that don't pick this up now and start working towards it are going to be absolutely floored when the next major disruption comes.
Mm. And I'll stay with you, John, because I want to probe further. And you've seen a lot of companies, you've consulted to a lot of companies, and you've, specifically for this, you know, flexible models and organizational design. And I want you to see if there's one example that you could give, and you don't need to name it necessarily, but I think, and we've gotten a few variations of the same question, and that question keeps popping up, which is, how to manage this, you know, recovery is, if it's going to happen in different times for different companies with different, for different countries with different markets, and what kind of organizational structure would support that flexibility? So if you can think of an example, or if you don't have an example, maybe how would you do it that the listeners can practically take home some inputs?
Yeah, look, the problem in today's environment, we all accept that things are happening fast. And, you know, by the time you make forecasts and implement those forecasts, you're already out of date. I think probably the best example I can give you, it's probably too good an example, and they've been doing it for a number of years, is Zara in the fast fashion. They have the advantage, of course, of having their own stores. They take the information on a daily basis of what's happening in their stores. They feed that back to their planners. They've got functional specialists inside their business, you know, manufacturing, logistics, sales and marketing. But they also have teams, multidisciplinary teams who are seconded out of those functional teams and come together and focus on different aspects of the agile sort of fast fashion business that they are trying to service. And that is in women's fashion, it's in men's fashion, it's in home furnishings, etc. They are, you know, we've seen similar things done by Adidas, when they've been the sponsor for all the garments for World Cups in the past, where they've been bringing multidisciplinary groups together and giving them targets and getting them to work together and relating to those. We're not going to get rid of functional people, but the problem is we can't expect functional specialists who are managing the business vertically to do that one day and be managing the business horizontally the next. Because the customers at the end of the line today have become so demanding, they want instant gratification. So I think it's the speeding up of the customer demand that's going to force organizational design. I think in the industrial side of the world, there's no better example than Schneider Electric, who have adopted a whole multiple supply chain approach, four or five supply chains, different configurations, servicing different customers precisely, and getting rid of the over-servicing and the under-servicing. That's having a big impact on their business because it's getting rid of a lot of the unhealthy inventory they've been having. And it's also, funnily enough, one of the side effects of being more precise about the way you service customers and giving them what they want, no more, no less, is that you end up with a lot more satisfied customers, and because you're delivering on the promise. And as a result, they tend to buy more. So the impact they're seeing is that not only is it getting their cost structures down, but it's actually having a positive impact on their top line revenue. That's the things we've got to expect going forward.
Mm. I'll jump to Fred, because I know that ERA, you know, you do a lot of automation in the supply chain. You get a lot of data. You, I think you call it cognitive supply chain automation. And then I was wondering if you, with your clients, can also plug in, and we talked about some examples before, but you know, how can ERA help also, and what you've seen applied to this kind of situations and scenarios where you need a lot of flexibility in your supply chain and access data, interpret data, and then take actions based on that?
Yeah, it's a very interesting moment, because what we build is cognitive automation, right? We automate and augment a lot of the decision-making process that is sitting between strategy and execution, the center of the pyramid. The reality is, in peacetime, the center of the pyramid is already clogged. You talk to any of our clients, they all say the same thing. Our planners don't have the time to do what they're supposed to do. They only touch 20% of the decision they're supposed to touch. So there are two processes that are happening. The first one is you try to increase the accuracy of your forecast, of your prediction, to ease the pain, basically, and increase the accuracy of the decisions that are made at the center of the pyramid. But of course, when you hit a situation like COVID, all your signals go off, and your beautiful data science-based models are completely useless for a while, because, you know, how can you predict that someone that your product's going to be off the shelf overnight if you're selling soap or pasta or rice, and the news hit with COVID-19. So what we've seen our clients is refocus actually on two areas. The first one is visibility, real-time visibility, end-to-end, what is happening in my supply chain, and action, what I call actionable visibility, which is what can I do about it? I gave the example earlier of one of the largest life science company in the world reaching out to us and saying, can you please tell us right now which are the hospitals or the distributors who are hoarding, because we have a responsibility to making sure that the supply that we deliver are delivered in the right amount to the right people. You saw in the US a lot of the scandals around this, and sometimes fair or not fair, and you know, large organization being taxed of not playing fair with the different states and so on and so forth. So we went from this cognitive automation, trying to optimize the forecast over the long term and really look at ways to gain a percent here in service level and cash and cost and so on and so forth, to real-time visibility and ability to replan and do what-if scenario in real time. And that became, it is right now, the number one driver of activity. We are seeing, and I was talking this weekend with two of our customers saying, look, we're moving from a 3 to 4 weeks planning cycle, trying to plan 13, 14 weeks ahead. We already, today, we've already adjusted to be replan every week over a 4 week horizon. The agility, I think Roxanne was touching on that, agility is the key. So understanding, and now the human brain basically takes over. We talk about going from people doing the work supported by machines to machines doing the work guided by people. And that's really the key, right? You got a lot of compute power to understand what's happening in your supply chain, in your demand, your supply, your logistic transportation. But you have the brains of the humans here trying to really adjust how the operating system is running. So it's the acceleration of the speed from decision to action and from event to decision that we're seeing happening. And this is not a, it will happen. It's what we're working on right now with all our clients.
Mm-hmm. And Roxanne, for you, a question and a kind of a reality. I mean, I think we've all seen that it was meant to be a funny thing, but you know, who has done the most in terms of digitalizing your organization? Answer number one, CEO, number two, CTO, number three, COVID-19. And people saying COVID-19. So do you see this crisis as an acceleration to, you know, more digital solutions being adopted and implemented across supply chains? Are you doing projects more, even more at AMS, or you are already settled, or how do you see these things?
Well, actually, I'm not so sure. So where I see definitely a push towards more digital practice is in how we communicate, how we engage, having tools which provides visibility in real time. I think that's definitely gonna become very very critical, because this helps you to make the right decision. Now, in terms of automated planning or automated decision making, I would remain a little bit skeptical. In the sense, as I think Fred mentioned, AI learns from or maybe machine, let's put AI on the side. So machine learning run from the past. And when you face such a crisis, there is not so much learning model you can, the machine can base itself upon to be able to correct or replan appropriately. So I am a bit far now from my original picture of having almost no-touch supply chain, where the human mainly handles the exception, to having a model where there are tools to assist decision. There are tools which gives you opportunity to do scenario so that you can maybe make the best data-supported decision. But definitely not to the extent where the human is completely out of the picture. As I was joking before we started this this podcast, I think no company would survive today with a fully digital supply chain, in the sense that there are simply too many new information coming up every day. So in our case, I think in bad weeks when there is a lot of new lockdown announced, we might replan the scenario 3 times, and we might have for each scenario a couple of variants. And I think no machine can really handle this this level of complexity. Besides the human aspect, which is how you get out of a crisis, is all about leveraging through your supplier, engaging, communicating, reprioritizing, playing on relationship, and this only the human can do. So I was already a bit mixed because pure digital supply chain really rely on very accurate data, very good input, and I think very few companies, at least in the field where I operate, would have this level of precision that you can really trust with closed eyes the outcome of the engine. And in a crisis mode, this is even less possible. Yeah.
I'll stay with you, Roxanne, because we have a couple of people listening in and tuning in from a 3PL perspective. And we got the question in terms of, the logistics service providers are not in a great shape either right now. I mean, obviously, this whole disruption has disrupted their flows quite a lot, as well as cash flows, financial as well. There's a lot of risk of, you know, some potentially can go bankrupt and some more consolidation in the industry. How are you working with 3PLs? How do you see the relationship, you know, as a manufacturer to your 3PL partner moving forward?
So I think what works for us very well is we are not too diversified. So we have a couple of partners. This enabled us to build a strong connection with those partners. And thus, having those connection and exploring option to face a disruption really proved to be successful. So I think we will continue with this. So it's never going to be the point to have a unique partner, because I guess the risk would be too high. Some partners are very strong in one region or in one country, a little bit less so in another country. You have the integrator and the global forwarding, and this playing with different schemes and the different way of transporting actually really helped us in this crisis. Thus, we will continue strengthening the relationship with our existing players, so that we keep this level of flexibility.
John, I will have an elephant in the room question for you, because you're probably the most neutral, let's say, that you can answer this.
Yep.
Shift of manufacturing from China. Been loads of discussions. Japan has actually publicly announced a fund for companies that would relocate their production from China to Japan.
Yeah.
I think obviously we've had the trade war that seems to be reignited. India has just announced a couple of days ago that they're trying to lure away from China US manufacturing and manufacturers. Yeah. What's your take on this?
I think it's inevitable, would be my comment there. I think leaving aside all the things that have gone on and who did this and so on, I think people have recognized that on the procurement side, we've gone too far. I was going to say earlier that I think one of the things we've got to do organizationally is get our chief procurement officers and pull them back inside under the chief supply chain officer. I think we've got to improve the internal coordination and direction at what these guys are doing, because I think they've gone too far down the route of searching the world for single low-cost sources. I think the whole argument plays into also the in-source-outsource argument. I know in Australia there's a big discussion going on now about, which things should we make locally and get seed capital from government to kick off new approaches. I think 3D printing is going to come, and flexible manufacturing and low-scale manufacturing is going to come to the fore, just like a couple of decades ago, we stepped down from big steel mills to mini steel mills. So I think there's going to be a lot of thought going into our sourcing. And on top of that, we've got to look at our range of suppliers and try to understand not only their capabilities and what they can do for us in costs or capacity, but what's their mindset. I think we generally have to understand which of our suppliers are going to be collaborative in good times as well as bad and stick with us, which suppliers are pretty transactional and go with whoever they want to go with, which suppliers have got capacity when we need it. We may not buy from them primarily, but they could have excess capacity, which suppliers have got a sort of a more creative and mindset that would help get solve some problems. So, coming back to your answer, I think everything tells me that China's going to have to work really hard now to hang on to probably the share it's got of manufacturing. And I think inevitably it's going to move not only to other Asian countries, but it's going to, slices of the critical items are going to move back to some of the Western countries, and mainly for reasons of agility and protecting themselves in these sorts of difficult times.
Mm. And just a quick follow-up question to that, John, because we've had this specifically, and we have a couple of people that tuned in from Latin America, from Eastern Europe, specifically in these two regions, right? Eastern Europe and Latin America. Do you see any potential hubs where it could go? So definitely from China, Southeast Asia and Vietnam has been a great winner for now. But Eastern Europe and Latin America, where do you see a potential?
Both those areas, I think, have got great potential. I think Eastern Europe, has got a good cost structure right there and has proven itself in the past to be a pretty reliable supplier. And I think in South America, we've got some pretty sophisticated companies down there in Brazil and some of the other places. So, I think here's a big opportunity for them to get out and make a play for, taking and picking some of that production up. I think it's going to be a lot more even. I think we're going to see companies looking on regional and local basis as well as global. So generally speaking, I think we're going to have to be a lot more sophisticated with our procurement strategies. That's the bottom line. And I think that can only occur if we pull procurement people in under the chief supply chain officer, because at the moment we've got too much procurement going on at the back end, which is unconnected with what's happening at the front end of the business.
Mm, right. Fred, I'll jump to you on the topic of digitalization, and I would be curious to see how your, especially the potential clients, right? I mean, are you seeing that more people are coming and asking, hey, Era, can you help us with this and that? I'll give you a bit more context. I get two types of answers, right? So, I mean, when we speak to our clients, maybe in the manufacturing side, some of them are more, literally crap. We should have had some solution in place, but let's do it fast. And some other are like, okay, I mean, I'm not going to go into crisis mode and do some system revamp or whatnot, because I don't want to crash anything else. And I need something as simple as, as basic, if you may. So I'm curious how you're seeing it from your perspective.
So I see both, but I think it's not either or. I think what we're looking at right now, kind of back to the point I was making earlier, is you need real-time visibility. You need, as Roxanne was saying, the ability for people to actually replan, rethink, do what-if analysis. You do, when it gets to a level of complexity, need to have some computer assist for that, for optimization, for some level of predictions when appropriate. And I think, as I said, we call it moving from cognitive automation in time of peace to cognitive automation in time of war. I think fundamentally what we're seeing right now is an acceleration and an increase in the volume of inquiries for era-like technologies. And it's very interesting to see where it's coming from. We've always been positioned at the C-level with our solutions and our expertise. Now we're getting more and more inquiries coming from board of directors, coming from holding companies, saying, what do we do next? Because we've been investing for the last 30 years, 20 years, you name it, in every wave of technology, cloud, big data, data science, AI, you name it. And when COVID hits, CEO looks at the board and say, I don't know. Who is buying my product? They don't know. And it's crazy. So I think and I experience right now, what I think is going to happen is really the boards are going to look to the CEOs and say, how do we make sure that this doesn't ever happen again? And we're going to go back to the basis, the data management, the people and the computers, and how do we work together? The other point I was going to make is, think any project right now that has a chance of getting through is a project that guarantees an ROI within 3 to 6 months. I think those long tail projects, I'm going to implement something that's going to, you're going to see an ROI in 2 years, right now they're out of the question. But if you can demonstrate that by implementing your technology, you're going to get an ROI very quickly, and you can explain fundamentally how that's going to happen, there's going to be an uptake for this kind of project. So I think there's going to be a big shakeup in our industry right now. I think COVID is going to act as the ignition for a rethinking of data structure, vendors, dependency. We talked about dependency on China, but you're also dependent on a very small number of key vendors. And if they don't deliver solutions that allow you to have the visibility, the agility, and the intelligence, right, to take real-time decisions and adjust your organization, everything depends on your data. So that data architecture is going to go from a nice science experiment. Now we've put a data warehouse. That didn't work. Then we went and put a data lake, a data grid, a data ocean, a data swamp, a data whatever you want. What did that give you when the crisis hit? Nah, you just had some guys somewhere in an office saying, we got the data. But that wasn't pervasive around the organization. It wasn't trusted. It didn't allow you to make real-time decisions. So we've seen that, you know, over and over. And I think right now there is a tidal wave of change that's going to hit. And it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to rejig that part of our industry.
Right. Roxanne, a question for you. What other alternatives to layoffs in this period of crisis? I think it's a question that most companies are considering. I mean, you never want to lay off your people. So maybe some tips and tricks or things that have worked for you.
You mean to avoid layoff? Is that the
question? To avoid or to minimize. I mean, I don't know if you can 100% avoid it, but to minimize. So are there any other ways in which you can cut cost apart from firing people, basically?
I'm glad you had that question.
Thank you so much.
I'm giving you all the easy questions, yes.
I think it depends on how desperate the company is and how short-term measure, what is the importance of short-term measure. Because when you lay off, you lose talent. And if, again, as I said before, if there is an opportunity for rebounds and it's a fast rebound, then you end up exactly with the same challenge as having to retrain people. So I think we should, as company, we should make sure we don't take short-term decision which will impact our mid-long-term. Now, in this time of crisis, I think there is, I guess John was hinting a bit to this on looking beyond the silo thinking of function. So an alternative to minimize layoff I could think of is to redeploy maybe the resource in area which might be more pressing at the moment. So it could be maybe something a bit out of the blue, but I think there is a lot of pressure those days on facility, on how to manage the premises. And thus, if you have some headcount which maybe are in planning but do not have a full blown effort to spend on planning, then they could be reallocated to help out in another domain. So I think this is where, as organization, we have to be very unified to try to make the best fit, because there are some domain of activity which are maybe understaff, and some domain which might be overstaff. And first, looking at rebalancing could be an alternative to minimize layoff. Another aspect could be also to debate and convince the management of the necessity to plan for the future. So I think John was also talking about this, to say, moving forward, we might need teams which are more focused on business continuity plan, not only on writing a plan, but on exercising the plan, revisiting the plan, reassessing risk more regularly, looking at the supplier base, looking at whether there is a weak point in the chain. And those are maybe new job which might emerge out of this COVID crisis. But of course, this solution only works if it's not a cash flow problem. It's really more having too many resources based on the current demand.
Right.
So, yeah.
John, I want also to ask you the same question. I mean, you mentioned also the example from South Africa. You have clients all over the world. Do you have some other, maybe options or where could companies look at, and how could they think of things to minimize, let's say, the impact in terms of the workforce?
Look, I think it's a lot to do with, changing that. Maybe it's about, it's we're getting down to job sharing. We are trying to hang on to our staff, but reducing the number of days that they're working is one possibility. I think that the other possibility is to really have a look at bolstering our internal control towers. I know a number of companies have got their own networks. There are 4PLs that offer that as a shared structure. I think we could start building up that facility. I take the view, and it's a maybe a bit of a biased view, but any company today that doesn't have its own internal network optimization modeling capability and data analytics capability are already going out the door, let alone COVID coming along. So I think we've got to start to build up the inside big companies networks of these control towers that may employ 30 or 40 people with screens. The data analytics that goes with it and the modeling that goes with it, all helped by the type of error technology, and making decisions on a day-to-day basis, but also building models that what I would call are ready to run, such that when you do have a disaster, you've got something to actually run a scenario. We've had people calling us from all over the world saying they've got products, and a lot of it's fresh product going from places like South Africa into Europe. And they've got no idea when they harvest their stone fruit and their blueberries and everything else, just what the market looks like in Europe for those products. If they had a network model, they'd be able to run different scenarios and look at the various limits and then take a view of what they think is the one that they should run with. We don't have those capabilities at the moment, and we just can't use spreadsheets and things. So I think there's some more clever jobs that we could start moving people into in the short term to bolster this smart capability that I'm talking about for the organizations.
Super. Great. Well, I'll slowly wind it down here, because we are close to the 1 hour mark. I want to thank everybody for the questions. We have many more questions, actually, and I just want to reassure all the participants that we will store it and we will do some more webinars. I also want to say that we've done a podcast with John in the past. So if you want to hear a little bit more about some of the models and his thoughts, you can listen to the podcast. It's called Leaders in Supply Chain. We've also done one with Roxanne, so you can find both John and Roxanne. We need to do one with Fred. You're next. I want to encourage you to buy John's book if you, because he has dynamic supply chains. I read that, and I'm not a supply chain specialist. I read that in 2 days or something, so that's amazing. And you've launched the new one, right? The Transforming Supply Chain just this year. And do check out ERA and their capabilities, of course. And thanks a lot for making the time to join us all today.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you all for joining.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Have a great day. Bye. Thank you. Thanks, Radu.